Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2462. That's 2462. Tonight we're going to have, I'm hosting the show, but we do have a special co-host. We do this on Tuesdays and Thursday nights. They are experts in the field, and we bring them on, and anyone can call in and cover any topic that they might like to share or ask questions of from Lori. Her name is Lori Golden, and she is from San Diego, California. And she, too, is a survivor and a private psychotherapist, and she works with all other kinds of trauma and abuse with survivors. So we're very happy to have her here on the show. Before we start the show, and you can certainly call in and be a part of this, it's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Okay, that's our call-in number. A lot of people listen on their computers. A lot of people are bashful about speaking on open air. And I can say to you, if you can talk on the phone, you can call the show, because here we are, and this is what we're doing. It's really not a hard thing to do. And, I'd always read the mission statement, because this is only a little part of what NASCA does do. But it gives you somewhat of an idea for those that listen on their computers and they don't know too much about NASCA. We do have a single purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways, okay? Number one is educating the public, very important, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood abuse, okay, sexual abuse in particular. Presenting facts showing that child abuse to be a pandemic. It's worldwide. It's everywhere. Number two is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I want to bring on our guest tonight, Lori Golden, and she is again from San Diego, California, and just have her say hello. And I think there is a topic that I can find here that we absolutely can, you know, speak about. But Lori, say hi to everyone out there.
Hello, I'm Lori Golden. I am an incest survivor and a psychotherapist, and I am very happy to be on the show tonight. So I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for offering that. Many times I work with people who are incest survivors. I'm one as well. And boy, if that wasn't a taboo subject to bring up, you know, incest. But unfortunately, everyone out there who are listening, incest is a big thing in families. You know, it's out there so much more than people might realize or certainly won't even think about. In my case, it was an uncle and a brother, and there was no help. I have a big mouth, and I did tell on him, but didn't do any good. I don't know what reaction. Go ahead.
What was their reaction when you told?
Well, with my brother, I told my mother, and she said things like, this happened in families, and that was the end of that.
Okay.
And with my uncle, I was living with a pedophile uncle and his wife, and my mother was getting divorced. And I stayed there for a year and a half in their house. I had to. I didn't know where my mother was. I didn't have a telephone number. And my so-called bio father had taken off to California. So I was basically alone, okay? I was abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And and quite frankly, you know, it was, I read in your bio, too. Every day you're waiting for it to happen because I was there for a year and a half. And 176 times I was touched, okay?
Yeah.
And that's the way it was. And I had a drunk aunt that I happened to like. She came over to the house to visit at times. And she looked at me and she said, Carol, there's something wrong with you. And I'm your friend. I'm here. And at any given time, you can tell me what's going on, okay? And I was much too thin. My aunt, who was being paid, by the way, by my mother, to supposedly care for me, was underfeeding me. And I had to eat dog biscuits. I did that, you know, all these things. And my aunt, I didn't know if she was going to actually tell when I actually told her what was going on because she was always so drunk all the time, and I thought, well, she'll probably forget, you know. But I trusted her, Lori. I trusted her somehow. We formed this bond, and the minute that I told her that night, she told on that pedophile uncle, and I was removed the next day.
Wow.
I didn't go with my mother. She didn't want me yet. And in the meantime, she had remarried. I didn't even know that. I had a brother that was living with her parents. And he was being treated like a king, okay? And I didn't want him to go through any of the things I went through, but, you know, he was being treated well. And so, you know, I had no relationship with my mother. We never bonded. So for me to tell her when I was 9 years old then, because it started at 6 to 7 and a half with the uncle, then at 9 years old, after being kidnapped and raped in New York City, okay, in Staten Island, actually, it wasn't in the city.
Staten Island.
And my brother, too.
I lived on Staten Island.
Oh, did you really? I lived in Bullshead.
Yeah, I lived
on I used to go to school in Travis. I was bused every day, a city bus to Travis, PS 26. And pedophiles go where children go.
Yep.
That's what they do. So I was easy prey. And anyway, at telling my mother about my brother, she took no interest. And as far as with my uncle, she had picked me up and she said, why didn't you tell me? And I thought to myself, I wasn't a stupid kid. I was just a disturbed kid. Who wouldn't be? I thought to myself, why couldn't you see? Because everybody else could see. You know, they could see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So incest is something that is a terrible, terrible problem. And it's in a lot of families. And the reason why people many times keep their mouths shut, and I don't have to tell you this, but is because they don't want, either they're not believed, maybe they did try like I did, or, you know, they don't want to ruin the family. They're ashamed, and there's all different things that go through their minds, and they're threatened, and they don't want people. Because when I was growing up, you didn't air your dirty laundry. You know, you had to live with that, whatever it was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I see the bills here. Let me bring him on. After all, he's the CEO. Let me bring him on. Hello, Mr. President.
How do you do? Thank you for having me, and thank you, Lori, for being here. I'm wondering where everybody else is. Come on, guys. Call in.
Well, this is what happens. I was talking to Lori about that, and, well, there's too many things going on right now in the world. But it certainly would help if people did call in, because we are here for you, okay? And tonight we have Lori Golden on, and she's a professional in her, you know, she's a psychotherapist. So if you have any types of questions that you need help with, or you would like to bring out, put on the table, I'm sure Lori would be more than happy, you know, to answer any of your questions. So the number is 646. Yes, she would. The number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. So give us a call. I also explained to Lori that a lot of people do listen on their computers because they don't want to be on air. They're bashful. Or they're not ready to, you know, to talk about their problems. So,
well, this
those
is
the, of you
this
that
is the group of
that.
People that we do the show for, the people who are reticent about
mm-hmm.
calling in, that's fine. But we do hope that at some point they'll hear voices like Lori's and yours and mine who are
mm-hmm.
telling our truth, trying to be as honest as we can, and explaining to them that it's in the telling of the secrets that we begin the healing journey, and you really can't begin it until you give them up. Now, the thing is, you know, as you said before, you know, telling it to your family didn't help. You have to tell it in a environment, in an arena, where there are people who are not going to poo-poo you. In other words, will you be believed and supported
mm-hmm.
and validated? All of which happens here in all of NASCA, but certainly on this radio show. So that's the person that we're really doing the show for. Maybe the person's on the cusp, never called in before, but have thought about it a bunch of times. Well, here's an opportunity. I got to tell you, I know and love Lori very much. She's a wonderful survivor and representative of NASCA, and she has a very easy way for people to hear the message, the way she delivers it as a psychotherapist and as a survivor. It's very easy for you to listen to Lori, for me to listen to Lori. And she has a really good, you know, amount of experience behind her. So
mm-hmm.
let's ask people then to call in, especially those people who have never done it before but are thinking about it. That's our goal, to get a couple of them to call in tonight.
You know, I want to say that people that are listening, the point of sharing a secret, I understand, because I know the first time I did, it was very frightening. I actually thought my father was going to come and kill me. That inside little girl in me really was terrified that I told a group of people in Incest Survivors Anonymous that I was sexually abused by my father. And it was the most relieving experience that I had had up until that point in my life. And at the same time, it was very scary, and a lot of shame came up in me because I realized I blamed myself for my father's behavior. And so when people want to speak up and they don't, it's shame and fear are the two biggest factors that keep us quiet. And when we stay quiet, we continue to live with our abuser. When we speak out, we're shutting the door on our abuser. We're finally saying no more. But it's a very scary process to be able to come out into the open after you've been told and been abused, especially as a child. And, you know, with that, if you tell, something bad is going to happen. And I know for me, I was terrified to tell. I thought I would be killed. So when I finally did tell, and my father did threaten me with my life. I mean, there's no question. He shamed me. He told me I was bad when I was a teenager, because it started when I was 5. And when I was a teenager, he started telling me that I could be thrown into prison, that people, you know, when I was younger, he told my mother would leave and my mother would hate me because I was getting so much special attention. So when you grow up with this kind of, you know, fear-based thoughts you know, thinking, you really feel like something awful is going to happen if you tell. And the truth is nothing ever awful happens when you tell. You get relief. You get freedom. And you get healing. But it's such a hard thing to tell that little child in us, it's okay, we're safe now. We have to tell in order to start the healing journey. So I just want to say something about that.
No, I'm glad you did.
It's so true.
Go ahead, Bill.
I just find Lori so easy to hear, to listen to, because of how her delivery is so calm, you know, and she's very knowledgeable. I can guarantee you that. She's a completely non-threatening, Carol, you know, in her delivery and so forth. So especially for those people who have a kind of a, and she has a, you know, if you're out there and you have a kind of a tenuous relationship with your own story, maybe your own therapist, maybe you're seeing somebody and it's not working that well. That's common. There are various reasons that can occur, but the point is maybe you have told your story and you haven't gotten relief. We are set up as an organization to support any person who's experienced any kind of trauma in their youth and has not, you know, gotten on their healing journey yet. Maybe they've tried, but it hasn't been effective. So here's your chance to, you know, to check in with Lori. You know, you don't owe us anything, you know. But if you're out there and you're on that, if you're sitting on the fence, we want you to jump off the fence and come onto our side, because the grass is greener on our side, you know? Right, Lori?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
The grass is definitely greener on the healing side.
Mm-hmm. And I can attest to that, too. Bill and I have been on the healing journey for about the same number of years, I think. I don't know. Very close, anyway. And
Lori, too.
You know, it's... And Lori,
yeah,
too. Okay.
I started my memory started in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The person who's listening tonight has over 100 years of experience between the three people who are already on the show of healing. No, 100 years of recovery is talking on the show between the three of us right now. This is a fantastic opportunity for a newcomer or for somebody who's been around a while and maybe, you know, doesn't feel they've really fully grasped what's available to them, because there's a lot of comfort waiting for the person who's really committed to the right kind of, you know, any whatever it is, the right kind of healing. And we're all here for you, 100 years worth more. How's that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it really is.
I think that's great. I think that's great.
It really is.
Well, you know, things are different in that sense today. I have to say this because when we were kids growing up, there wasn't really anything out there to help people. Not that I know of, anyway.
No.
And then now. And even in the 70s, I remember I was living in Red Bank, New Jersey, and across the street, there was this building, and there was an office trying to open up. And what they was for, you know, child abuse. And they couldn't get the funding. They were there like about 2 weeks or something. I swear to God, that's all it was. And they were gone. So even in the 70s, there wasn't really that much, of buildings opening and programs opening and things that people need. Today, it's such a different story because there is a lot of help out there if you know, how to get it, where to go. That's why we have these programs. If people look at our NASCA website, which is where I get most of my information from, and that's NASCA.org, that's NAASCA.org, I go down to the red blocks, that's what I call them. There's a wealth of information. There's programs. When people call me, because I'm the night owl, and I guide them right to that spot on the website, and I'm able to show programs to them. Go ahead.
Let me tell you, Carol, I've changed the website just overnight. So they're now pull-down menus again. They were at one time... You would hover your mouse over this bright red bar that goes across with five categories. And mm-hmm. the things under each category would fall down. And that broke mm-hmm. at some point. And I was waiting for a moment to finally figure out how to fix it. And I did it. It took me all night last night. I was up all night. But finally, mm-hmm. you know, we had a board meeting this weekend, Lori, which was a very important one, where we accepted, unfortunately, Joe Cox's resignation, but with gratitude, accepted Charlie Stecker as our new secretary, and we straightened out a lot of responsibilities that each of us is taking on to accommodate covering all the things Joe was doing. Anyway, it was a very mm-hmm. successful meeting, and I felt, and then I went and I first changed all those things on the website, the names and stuff of the people that were doing the various jobs. And then I said, okay, the time has come. I got to commit myself to fixing this thing that I know has been broken for a long time. And I'm so proud, Carol, I figured it out. And
I'm so proud of you too, by God.
You know? You hover your mouse over any of the five categories that are in this red bar that runs near the top of the front page, and the I think about eight things in each category fall down, and then you just go to the one you want to read now and click on it, and it opens up. It works great. But it took I started with the assumption that I didn't know what I was doing, which is where I needed to start with, and I went online and figured it all out. Anyway, it's fixed, and it's running. It looks great. So if you've not been to the NASCA website for a while, go there, NASCA.org. It's so easy. That's the centerpiece for all of what NASCA does. One thing
by the way,
this radio show. Yeah.
I was impressed with NASCA's website. That's what made me actually call you, Bill. I was so impressed with the website and the information that you have on there. And you cover all, you really do cover things and organizations that can help, and It's really a good informative website.
Well, it's a website that we grab. I know, like, people who go out and do presentations when we can. Now we've got this COVID out, everybody's forget about it. This year's gone. But, you know, the point is I always grab information from the website, and I have an abundant amount. And I give out all kinds of handouts and everything from the copies that I make. And it is a wonderful website. I have gotten a lot of, people who have actually said, oh, my God, the website is so big. It has so many. It covers everything. And
yeah,
it really
does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It absolutely does. So I'm proud of our website. And when I go out and do those presentations, I always, you know, make sure that I mention the website probably two or three times and tell them how to get there mm-hmm. and so forth. It is very effective. I think now we're going through very hard, difficult times, the country, the whole world, actually, in many, many places. And people, they're so stressed out that they're just sort of like vegging when they can, you know, and just trying to wait to see what's going to happen next. And child abuse is something, well, it's gone up, Bill. Let me say this. Child abuse, according to the CDC, I've been doing a lot of research on this, and the FBI, and a couple of the others, Child Help, too, I believe, also mentioned it. I'm not sure. But people are making phone calls. Now, that I'm very thankful for. And the mm-hmm. amount of phone calls that are being made, though, because, you see, when you're living in a house where there's so much domestic violence, where there's so much sexual abuse, physical, mental, emotional neglect, and it's summertime, and if you're in the urban areas especially, you know, a lot of times people don't have the proper air conditioning, the windows are open, you can see things, you can hear things, and with this stress that we're going through with the COVID, and also, too, with the terror that's in the streets, people are taking it, unfortunately, out on their children and the most vulnerable people in the family. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's terrible.
Yep. Yes. And, you know, the more helplessness people experience and the more fear they experience in their lives, the more rage it produces, because people, when they're helpless and fearful, do feel rage. instead of feeling helpless and fearful, they go to rage. And I really, I mean, I can't imagine what some homes are going. I can't imagine if I were a child right now living in my home and having to be socially distant and isolated from, because my freedom was getting out of my house. So having no freedom, having to be in my home would have been horrifying for me as a child. So I can't imagine what children must be going through right now that are being abused in homes.
It's horrific. It's horrific.
Yes.
And,
yeah,
you know, these kids, is, you know, the runaways are running away even more. Those that are into, you know, cutting, they're cutting more. All the things that they, you know, that they go through is what they're doing even more so of. And because
well,
it's, the children are so frightened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing is happening for adults, okay? I want to make the point that, you know, because our audience is adults, and they're in various stages of recovery. Some are not in recovery yet, but they're exploring whatever this means, whatever this thing, healing and recovery, means. And it's mystifying to them. But I want to point out that, you know, the experiences that we have in childhood manifest in adulthood in a variety of different ways that are generally behavioral or temperamental. That we, in other words, trauma really lives in adulthood. The trauma occurs in childhood, but it shows up in adulthood by the decisions we make and the choices we make and the people we live with and all of this. And that increases, too, during a situation like this, because it's extremely stressful to be a person who knows that they have this something inside of them that's eating them alive and has not yet found a way to deal with it. That's still going on. And if they may be living with an abusive husband. They may be living back with their mom and dad because they can't afford their rent. You know, they may be living with the stress of children who are at home driving them crazy. But it's their problem. It's in them. They know it. And what happens is, unfortunately, their behavior gets worse. Their decision-making may break down. Their choices are detrimental, not helpful to their life. So this is the group of people that are out there, Lori, who, you know, I think we can really be helpful to. If they have a question about it, all they got to do is call in and ask. No threat. We get it. We will validate what you're feeling because the manifestations of trauma that occur in adulthood, they're pretty universal. The kinds of abuse that we go through are not. They're different kinds of abuse. But the experience in adulthood of the trauma is pretty universal. So there's going to be people around who have had the same experience, whatever you're having now. They know how you feel. They know what's going on. And we will gently lead you towards recovery and healing, which can take a lot of different forms, and we'll talk about that to anybody that calls in that wants to know. But the point is that that's the group of people who are listening tonight who I think we can really help.
And when I talk about children, I'm also talking about the child within the adult survivor. You know, we grow up into adults when we've been abused as children. And in many instances, we still feel like that frightened child. And, you know, so really today with all the uncertainty that is going on in the world and the not having any answers and this sense of this threat that's out there that we can't see, we can't touch, we can't feel, we just know it's out there, is going to trigger a lot of people into the feelings that they had as children will come up today in their adult life as we experience uncertainty and fear, because uncertainty creates fear in people in general. And it's quite a situation today, especially with isolating and social distancing I know people who are survivors that I work with. One of the hardest things for people that have grown up with abuse sometimes is just wearing a mask. Like it's the thing over your face that's covering you that isn't simple for many people. You know, some people couldn't care less about it. But people that I've talked to and people that I've worked with that are survivors have images of being held down and not being able to breathe during their abuse. And wearing a mask can feel suffocating. It can feel that way. So, you know, there's many different aspects to what's happening today that are going to trigger people in their childhood abuse. And I really hope people call in and just share some of their concerns and fears and triumphs, whatever people want to share about. Because it really is quite I have to say, it's quite a world today. This is quite no one's ever been here before.
Yeah, well, you know, that was actually, I think that was posted on the NASCA website. There was someone that showed, I think, a little girl with her hand over. Bill and I, of course, know this picture so well, because that means silence, and there's an adult putting a hand over a child's mouth. And so many of us, you know, when we were being abused, we did have that hand over our mouth if we were going to scream,
yes,
yell out for help or whatever, you know. And
yes,
so that can be a triggering thing in a sense, which was posted, and people spoke about that, because it's like having that hand over your mouth again as when you were a child. Other people it doesn't bother, okay, but there are those that it does bother. And
yes,
that's where that comes from. That's where it comes from, you bet.
Yep.
Yeah. If we don't get the proper help when we're a child, then all the things that we store inside, we don't get on our healing journey, okay? All the things we store inside goes into our adulthood. That's what happens. And behavioral is one of the things. Many times people turn to alcohol and drugs. And they run around on the streets 2 months. I was certainly in all those categories, or they cut, or they turn into bulimia or anorexia. I mean, the list is there's such a huge list of things that people can do as children, and it also goes over into adulthood. But you mentioned,
yes,
Lori, with the anger, okay? And anger is something that is so much out there today, and it displays its ugly head in all different ways. And it can,
mm-hmm,
be from what's going on in the streets. It can be what's going on in the homes. And we as adults, you know, it's not just children or young people that are out on the streets causing, you know, problems and chaos. It's also adults. And
right.
I often have to wonder what type of home they came from, because, you see, the past then becomes the present.
Yes.
And this is what they're displaying. And it's a horrifying thing that we're going through right now. Do I have an answer for it? I have some things going on in my head, which I won't say on air. But, you know, I've never seen anything this bad. I remember the riots from the 60s. I know that was down in Newark. I remember... in the 80s, there were some problems, and now we've got it now. And, you know, it's just something that is bringing the morale of people down, and they're just becoming just so overburdened, you know, with themselves,
yeah,
even. They feel, mm-hmm, hopeless, like you said. They feel helpless because they can't stop it. They can't protect their family. They can't protect themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and people, you know, I so often, people want to, when they're helpless, go to rage, because rage, you feel like the Hulk, you know, helplessness, people feel so vulnerable in helplessness, and often instead of feeling, rage is just the one big mask for so many other feelings, particularly helplessness and fear. And the more fear you have around you, the more rage you see in people.
And I'm seeing a lot of rage in different ways.
Yeah. And you know what's gone up too, and that's so unfortunate, is the suicide rate. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
I mentioned this on air the other night, but I know it's even gone up more. And it was 2,328 people a day. Depression kills people. And people are not talking. You know, they don't go and get the help that they can't even get into an office half the time. A lot of things are closed. You know.
I know. Yes.
So it's causing a terrible problem for our country. What keeps me going is my faith. And I'm tough. I never stop being tough. That's why I'm alive. And, and also, too, the mission that we're on, the three of us right on this show here, to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a good place in our lives right now because we have gone through our healing journey and we'll continue maybe to even grow even more until the day we die. There's always going to be something left over. I'm very hypervigilant, which is why I talk so fast. if a cup is falling out of the cupboard, I catch it in midair. Other people, it would smash to the floor. I'm like, dit, 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 dit.
Yeah.
And so I do go through that. So I don't think I'll ever lose that. And we're the type of people like myself where if you go into a restaurant, which you can't do right now, really, but if you go into a restaurant, you look for the exit signs, you know, in case something bad happens, you want to maybe sit next to the exit sign if you can. Things like that. It affects our lives in all different ways. And this isn't to adulthood. This isn't just children. This is adults, okay? And we just simply carry it through and over and into. Go ahead. You were going to say something.
No. I was just listening.
Yeah. So hypervigilance is a very big thing. I get phone calls from people who talk even faster than I do. Whoa. And, I ask them, to calm down, take a deep breath. Breathing exercises is good for that. If you suffer from panic. I got mad at my panic, and it went away. I'm Miss Panic Child. I wrote a book, and it's called Panic Child, because I was so filled with panic. And I actually got to the point in my life where I was able to, it was the anger at the panic attacks was stronger than the panic attack. And it went away.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's not common, right? But it worked for me. Everyone has to find what works for themselves, okay? They have to. And but right now, what we have to do is take a deep breath, try to calm ourselves down, and, busy yourself with something. You have a family, okay? If you feel like you're angry, take a walk outside. Take a walk around the block. Do yourself and your family a favor, okay? Because if you take out more on your family who are already going through their own stress, even the children are going through stress, this is craziness to them. It's craziness to adults, what we're going through. So if you come in and you're screaming at them and you end up hitting them, which is a no-no, you don't hit your children. You sit them down and you talk to them. People don't understand that you can sit down and talk to your children. Children are not as dumb as you think. Their minds are much more receptive and they're like a sponge. And if you sit down and talk to your child, you'll actually calm the child down, and you can have a conversation. And this is how you can bond with your child. And that's where the child then becomes safer at home. If you don't have that, and if you are in a home where you're being abused in all different directions, the children are just going to become probably very inward, they'll become outward, and they'll take their violence, their own way out on the street. That could be in school, if there is one, if you're allowed to go. They may become the bullies. They've done studies on kids that are bullies, and they realize that a lot of it comes from where they come from, and that's their home.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think we.
So what do you have
you
to
know,
say to this bill?
Well, I'm kind of half listening and half not, because my mind is still into, you know, the person that I think can call in tonight. I want them to do this. You know, this is such a great opportunity. And as I said, over 100 years of experience between the three of us are talking, are available for talking. And, you know, I especially feel bad for people who have tried recovery and have not had a successful experience, whatever they've tried. It certainly happened to me for a while. You know, we talked about telling your secrets. I told my secret to the wrong person a couple of times, and it delayed my chance at recovery for years. Because
can you share about that? Can you, Dale, can you share about that?
Yeah, I was
going to
skip over it because I've shared it before, but I'll be happy to. I'll say it this way. I just was able to speak to my attorney. I just got an attorney last year who has entered me into the New York State window of opportunity to bring a case against perpetrators that exists. It existed for 1 year, and in August it got extended for a second year because of coronavirus. So I just today spoke to my attorney, who is going to also be able to enter me in the Pennsylvania group of people who are now petitioning for recognition of the fact that we have not had relief for over 50 years. You know, I've been waiting. So the first time I chaired, I was still in high school. I was a freshman in high school, and I shared it with a priest. I thought, if I tell my story to a priest about what's happened to me in the previous 3 years, I'll get help. And I did share it. I shared it completely. Took a couple of hours, and it culminated in a confession where I was given absolution. And, you know, when you're a child abuse victim, it's not unusual, and people will identify with this when I say it, that you somehow feel responsible.
Absolutely.
At 14 years old, I felt responsible, or I felt ashamed at what I'd quote, allowed, unquote, to happen to me for 3 years. So it was supposed to be a big relief to me to finally find somebody, you know, who was willing to hear it. And unfortunately, this man turned out to be a predator too. So that completely destroyed that opportunity. And frankly, it really badly damaged my relationship with the religion I'd been brought up in, which was Catholicism. Later, in my mid to late 20s, I told a psychiatrist, with my parents in the room, they were not my perpetrators, because my abuse did happen at the hands of clerics, priests and brothers. But my parents had never even imagined that this had gone on with me when I was 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, you know. And the psychiatrist had nothing to share, because, as Carol said, back then, there was very little information about this thing that we now call trauma. He certainly wasn't trauma trained or informed. He was just a safe place where, in case my father had a heart attack, there'd be somebody medically trained to help him. That's why I chose it. But I absolutely got no help. We went back to him for 4 or 5 sessions, and I talked about everything that anybody wanted to talk about. So I told my whole story, from multiple angles. But there was absolutely no relief. You know, I had also gone to rape hotlines, and I'd gone to Planned Parenthood and another place and a couple of parishes. Nobody wanted to see me. In fact, you know, the rape hotlines and Planned Parenthood, frankly, treated me, because I was a man. I was a young man then in my 20s coming to them. I wanted to talk about my own abuse and rape. They didn't believe little boys could be abused. So for them, I was the enemy. Because it was only women that were accommodated by the rape people back then. So I tried multiple times, is the point. and never got any release. And each time I crossed a threshold where I thought I was going to get help and didn't happen, I sunk deeper and deeper and deeper into desperation. And
yeah.
by the time I did get help, I was about 30. I was 30. I was as desperate as I ever want to feel in my life again. And I was pretty willing. Frankly, I now recognize it as being more or less a good experience to have gone that low, to have been that miserable, to feel like such a disaster and a failure. Because if I hadn't, I might have had too much ego about it when I came around, you know, for recovery. But I was really beaten up, and I was willing to do whatever you guys told me to do, you know. Thank
yeah.
God. So that's the story of my various attempts. Now it's been a bumpy ride, but it's been a recovery of progress. I've made progress ever since when I was 30. Ever since. But boy, getting through the door of the psychiatrist, of the meeting room, calling in on the radio show, whatever it is that's going to be helpful to somebody now. I understand how difficult it is, because you may feel as miserable and crummy as I did when I was in my late 20s, and I had tried and tried and tried, and nobody wanted to hear it. In fact, they treated me like it was my fault, and that certainly is not how you're going to be treated if you call in here. 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. 595-2118. Right, Lori?
Yeah. You know, I'm listening to you and Carol and talking about how when you were in your younger years, you tried to tell or you did tell. And, you know, I didn't even remember my abuse until I was 37 when I came off drugs. And I had, even during my growing up years, I created like this big hairy ape that lived under my banister. I shared about this one time, that I thought I was afraid of this big hairy ape. Now, I didn't know that big hairy ape was my father that I was afraid of, but I created this big ape in my home. And that ape was terrifying to me at night. And it's just so interesting how I dissociated. And I remember even as a teenager waking up, not remembering. I remember when I had my memories and my flashbacks, I remember being a teenager waking up completely unaware that I was abused by my father the night before. I felt awful. I felt disgusting. I felt like something horrible had happened during the night, but I had not one memory or one thought that it was my father. So I'm always amazed that people, when they're younger, actually can tell. I didn't even connect it was my father until I started having my flashbacks at 37.
Right.
My first memories were of this big ape in my hallway, and that's how I got to figure out it was my father that was my abuser, by remembering the big ape that I was terrified of. So I never told anybody. I never even thought to tell.
Right.
Let me ask you something.
Just quickly, Carol, and I'll throw it to you. But it's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Lori just shared that, you know, she was a big drug user and she was using drugs to the point where when she came off of drugs, these memories started coming back. I was a big drug user too, and a boozer, drinking and using. Mm-hmm. So the same behavior, but I was doing it for the opposite reason. I remembered everything, and I was trying to forget it. You know. I mean, it's the same thing.
So
this is what I said before. We have different kinds of abuses that we go through, but the manifestation of it in adulthood is often very similar. And here you have an example of very similar experiences in our early adulthood for different reasons, but it's the same experience. And it got us to the same place eventually. So, Carol, sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's all right. I, too, turned to alcohol and drugs. I mean, I popped Quaaludes and drank. I should have OD'd, to be honest with you, because those two are depressants very much. People don't realize that alcohol is a depressant because when you start to drink, oh, you're feeling good and you're the clown and all this other stuff. And but then actually it turns into a depressant. So if you're popping pills, you know, that are a depressant also, it can make your heart stop. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
So there's a reason why I'm on this earth. But I wanted to ask you something, Lori. I'm getting a lot of phone calls about people, and this is interesting that it's coming now. But they want to confront their abuser. They don't know how to go about it, okay? My answer to them is like, well, you can write them a letter or you can confront them, you know? I mean, that's just the way it is, you know? And what do you think about that? I mean, did you ever confront your father or was he gone?
Yes.
Or he was gone,
no,
okay.
I confronted him in 1993. No, that's when he died. In 1989, I was 2 years into my abuse recovery, and I called CPS. My father was back east, and I called Child Protective Services on him because I spoke to my nephew, who was 14 at the time, and my nephew mentioned my father coming into the bathroom when he was taking a shower, and I ended up calling CPS, and I went back to New York. I was in California at the time doing my recovery. And I went to my father's place of work, and I confronted him. And, of course, he told me that I was psychotic, that I was crazy, that he would never do something like that. And at that time, I didn't have all my memories, but I had enough of an understanding that he abused me, you know, sexually abused me. And I confronted him at his place of business. I was too afraid to be alone with him. And what I say to people, if people can confront an abuser, even if the abuser has already died, because you can work with visualizations, you can work with confronting, working with writing to the perpetrator, your abuser. You don't have to physically be in the room with your abuser to confront an abuser. And I always say to people, unless you have to provide safety for yourself, you can't just go to an abuser if you're feeling at all there's a risk of being harmed in any way. And often I suggest taking a trusted person with them if they want to confront their abuser. But yes, I confronted my father, and it was probably the most incredible feeling that I was able to stay, to look him in the eyes and tell him that he sexually abused me. And that I also told him he would never see me again and that I wouldn't go to his funeral. And he didn't know at that point that Child Protective Services was going to my sister's house the next day. And then at that point, I met with my niece and nephews, and I told them for the first time that I was sexually abused, and I broke our family secret apart. Well, what happened as a result of it, which happens a lot in families with incest, I became the bad guy. I became the person that everybody no one else in my family had been out of the denial yet except me. So I was basically said I was the bad guy, and I really lost contact with my family for quite some time.
But I really encourage people to confront their abusers. I just think it gives us a tremendous amount of self-respect. And it's scary. And I have to say, when I came back to San Diego and a car would pull up next to me, I would look over and think that somebody, my father, was paying somebody to kill me. You know, that they'd take a gun out and shoot me or run me over. Or I had all sorts of frightening images of what could happen to me. But it was extremely healing. And it gave me a tremendous amount of courage to face my abuse.
Well, that's, I think that's good. I'm glad you did that because, you know, I'm sorry that people don't do it right away. So often we hold that secret, you know, out of fear. I was told, too, that I'd be killed if I told, you know, from my uncle, all right?
Well,
and he did try to run me down with his vehicle when I did tell. But I don't care. I'm still glad that I told. But, you know, we need to...
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. What?
No, finish your thought.
I'm saying that it is a freeing feeling because I remember, all right, I was with my mother. I never bonded with her, you know. But we were going down the road to where I was going to live again without my mother. But the word free came through my brain. I had one friend, and I was passing her house. My mother was passing her house. And I thought, gee, I wonder where she is. I wonder where she is. And because I wanted to say goodbye to her. But then I thought, what does it matter? I'm free. I'm free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you do get a sense of freedom when you do tell. And otherwise, many times we carry that around. You know, sure, we may go for help. And hopefully you find the right psychologist or whomever, whatever, you know, or maybe you won't. But the problem is if you don't confront the individual, if you don't, it's still in you, you know, it's still eating at you. There is a
mm-hmm.
sense of freedom. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It really is.
So I want to say I had never heard that story of Lori's before, but I think it's a terrific story.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
With CPS.
You know, yeah, and having told on account of your hearing that your nephew might be, you know, a victim too, I mean, that's just so great that you immediately, you know, you were relatively immediately took it up with your dad and with your family, even though it cost you something. I understand that. It costs a lot of us things. It cost me money too. But that's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is that it's a terrific story that I'd never heard that you'd share before about, you know, breaking your silence and why you did it. I think it's terrific, fantastic to show
Thank
people.
Thank you,
that,
Phil.
Oh, yeah, that's a sweet story. That's great. You know,
yeah, it was an interesting time. It really was.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I purchased a police trained guard dog after I confronted him.
Oh, geez.
So I would be safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't
well, you know that
all.
That's funny. You feel like you have to. You know, you feel
yeah.
like you need
yeah.
something to keep you safe after that, and it's okay. I mean, I
yeah.
sleep with a knife right next to my bed, and. I have a gun, yes I do, and I have other weapons. I have nunchucks. If someone's going to come after me, they're going to have to. There's three things that I'm going to use or go run after them because the way I look at it at this point in my life, okay, I've been beaten, I've been abused in all different ways, and I'm at the point now. If someone comes after me, I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yes.
No way.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mhm.
Yeah. I mean, I since 1990 I've had police trained guard dogs and
mm-hmm.
it's not I say to people it's so that I never live in fear. I never feel fear in my home. because I have a trained guard dog. And I don't want to live in fear. And as a woman, you know, we're vulnerable to attacks, not that men aren't, but the chances of something happening if I'm walking to my car, you know, that's in the parking garage, I'm going to carry pepper spray with me because I'll be damned if I'm going to have somebody attack me. You know, I am willing to go to any length to keep myself safe today as an adult. I will never put myself in situations where I have to live in fear. And this helps me to not live in fear. It doesn't make the fear worse. It actually makes the fear go away.
I agree with you.
So self-protection is a really big deal for people. You know, I often work with people who live in fear when they go to their car, let's say, and don't think that they could do something for self-protection. It's just so interesting. We really don't. When we've been abused as children, we do not think we have the ability to protect ourselves until we learn that we can and that we do. But we have to learn that we can.
Yeah. Again, think about the difference in size of a child. I believe yours started around 5 years old. Same with our cohort here, Carol. It's, you know, very small.
I see
child.
It. Yeah.
Compared to the adults around us, no wonder we grow up with a sense of being afraid of, in some cases, institutions or symbols of power, or, you know, this is no wonder. You know, it's what we came to know. We should fear, and we still fear it in adulthood. In a slightly different way, but we still fear it in adulthood. So it's amazing. Some of these stories I really appreciate because, you know, you can see so clearly how common. Really, we think we're unique. That's another thing we frequently hear from people. Well, I'm so unique, nobody will believe me, for example. Well, yes, we will.
Right.
Because we've heard it all. We're unique, sure, just like everybody else. But there is so much in common that binds us you know, don't be afraid to step forward and speak your voice, you will be believed. We will validate that we believe you, that you're on the right path and so forth. So, gosh, it's just amazing. Okay, I'll be quiet. You guys continue.
I just want to make a mention. Whoa. We have a 409 caller here. 409?
Okay.
This is Carol Abuse.
This is Roberta.
Oh, Roberta. Hi, honey. How are you? I'm so glad
you
called in.
Good. Yeah,
I'm thinking to myself, that number looks familiar. Okay, you're here. Good for
it's
you.
It's me.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. I don't know if you have how much you've heard of the discussion, but we're speaking about safety issues. Like, for instance, our guest tonight, Lori Golden, she has a police-trained dog, okay, that she has. She's a survivor. And then with myself, I was saying that I have nunchucks and a gun. I don't mind saying it. I have a gun and a knife. And they're all very close to my bed because that's where a lot of my abuse happened, okay? So anyway, that helps me feel better. Plus my house, I didn't mention this, is fully alarmed. So you have all those things. I shouldn't have any fear factor going on, but I think a lot of us, you know, when you go throughout life because of so much that we have gone through, and I do know Roberta, I know what she's gone through, and we always have carryovers and we're always working many times on fear factor. Walking down the street, you might look over your shoulder too many times, you know, to see if you're being followed, you know, things like that, because of hypervigilance, which I happen to have. And, you know, we need to find ways to feel safer. We deserve it, number one. And number two, It's as we go along in our healing journey, we learn how to make ourselves feel safer. How about you, Roberta? Do you feel safer than from the past, say when you were having your problems?
Well, I guess what I want to say is that for a long time, I guess I was just doing anything for pain, and I didn't even think about my own safety. I didn't even care about myself, really, in a lot of ways. I mean, not that I went out of my way to not care for myself, but I didn't even, I just felt like that. I guess really, whenever you're kind of like put off of your safety, your comfort zone, and you get used to it, and you just, you're just constantly, you just don't think about safety a lot of times, You think about survival instead of safety sometimes too, or you want to just get rid of the pain, because I had injuries and physical injuries on top of my psychological injuries and everything. But I guess what my safety net is, or what, if that's right, the way to say it or not, is I feel like my Creator knows me completely and has had his watchful eye on me for over 57 years and even before that. And I think these people that have done these all this wrongdoing, he's had his watchful eye on them too. And, he don't always play games, and I feel like the games have stopped. I mean, because I was harassed. I was threatened. I was stalked. I went through a lot of near-death experiences. I went through a lot of violence, different kinds, different people, different places, different forms, and I'm starting to discover even things that was done before, all these things that I remember, start to remember. But, my safety right. is just knowing that my Maker loves me and will never leave me, And if they've done it to me, they've done it to him, and they'll have to account for it to him,
Right.
And I was just like tonight, I was thinking about all these years, these people, I went for years thinking I had to do anything to honor my father and mother, I had to do anything. And then I find out you wake up one day and you think, well, all these responsibilities, obligations, and duties have been really unhealthy and unholy, and not that I'm saying I'm holier than the now, but I do believe that I'm somewhat holy, but, people claim I'm their sister, I'm their daughter, and all this for years, and then you have all these people, like marriage and divorces, this one calling me daughter, this one calling me sister, and I don't even know who they are, waking up, and I'm thinking, you're calling me sister and daughter, and I don't even know you, you're not even my friend. And really, my family has never been my friend.
No.
Right.
But your situation, right. Now her situation is a different type of situation. And I don't want to, that would be up to her to speak about that on air. She and I have had many conversations, and I'm really glad that you called in. So hers is more of a spiritual type of safety net, as I call it. And for Roberta, that's something that works very well for her. And I made mention earlier, much earlier in the show, that what keeps me going is my faith. And so I have that in common. That's a commonality. And then also, too, because I'm tough. I was that kid that either you're going to implode or you're going to explode, and I guess throughout my life, I've made myself become, and it came very easily to become tough, and that's my safety net, along with all my toys that I have by my bed, and the alarm that I set at night. There you go. What do you think about that, Lori?
Yeah,
I think an angel's watching over me.
Well, a lot of people believe in angels. I do too. I absolutely do. I believe I was touched by an angel when I was a kid, about 14 years old, on my shoulder. And that's another story that's in the book. But we all have certain things that we use, okay, to defend ourselves. With me, it's yes, faith, but also too, my weaponry, okay, and my house being totally alarmed. So now with Lori, she has a police dog, you know, that's well trained, and I can understand that too. And with Bill, what do you have? I don't know. What do you have?
I have a little travel dog. He's about 8.5 pounds.
I know. Hey, he's just a little tiny thing. I'd be afraid that I'd step on him. Oh my gosh,
yeah.
He's cute though.
He could bite
very,
you on your ankle
cute.
If you let him. But
I'll tell you, those little dogs can hold their own.
Yeah. Oh, yes, they can. They think they're a big dog.
Yeah,
they don't
can.
Think they're little. That's true.
Really?
That's true. But
he
you
has
know,
no
it,
idea.
It's a
he
shame.
Has two jobs. He has two mm-hmm. jobs. One is to keep the monsters away. That's his first job. And the other is to
yeah.
make sure mommy is happy. My wife is happy. That's his two jobs. And he does both extremely well. So, you know, we can't complain.
Well, I think that it's sad, though. I think that it's sad that we have to go through this. Okay. I mean, we are living in a dangerous world. We all have to go through it to some degree. But I believe certainly, too, that those of us who are survivors, that we take even more precautions to keep ourselves safe because we have that need to. That's that little child
well,
as you're
you know,
speaking about, Lori. Yeah, go ahead.
But I take those precautions so that I don't feel fear. And, again,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to live in fear. I really
right.
don't. And I do a really good job in not living in fear today, a day at a time. I really do. And I just find I had so much fear in my life, but I'll go to any length not to live in fear today. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just don't want to live in fear. And there's many things that obviously I have a strong spiritual connection and I'm very much, you know, do live a day at a time in my program of recovery from drugs and alcohol. And as an incest survivor, I live a day at a time. And I remember in 1990 when I got my first guard dog, it was the first time that I was able to sleep with my back towards my bedroom door. And that
mm-hmm.
was a miracle for me because I always had to sleep facing my bedroom door to see if my father was going to come through it. And
right.
when I got my guard dog slept right outside my bedroom door. And I was able to turn my back towards the door. And that was like an incredibly freeing experience. And that guard dog really became, in a lot of my my visualizations, that guard dog would be protecting that little girl in me. And mm-hmm. I just have fallen in love with a guard dog, and I've had them ever mm-hmm. since.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I love
me
it.
Too.
I
yeah.
Yeah,
animals
really
are wonderful,
do.
And I'll tell you what, if you can't take care of it, if you're not sure about taking care of an animal yet, I always tell people, get a plant, see how you do with the plant, you know. But animals
That's a good
are,
idea.
they give you so much back, especially, you know, especially dogs, because they add the layer of that's protective. Even a little dog
yeah.
like mine, people won't come in the house unless you assure them, oh, he's fine, you know, then they'll come in. But they're not coming in, they hear the barking. It doesn't matter if it's
no,
a small
don't.
Bark. They don't
yeah.
want to, they don't even want to try. So, and they are such good companions. And they are really, I think all dogs are at some level emotional support animals, you know? All of mine have been in my life. I adore animals, and dogs are among my favorite, of course, because they're domesticated, and I've always lived with dogs and cats, although my wife is now allergic to cats, so I don't have cats, but We have an outside cat. We have a feral cat that we feed occasionally, and she hangs out and probably kills some mice for us. So I consider that my outside cat. But
yeah.
But the dog is, yeah, the dog is not to be missed. If you've never had one, you know, I really recommend it highly, highly. Even as a kind of a treatment, that too is a path to healing, to own and take care of an animal. Let the animal take care of you, because they will. They will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very healing.
Well, I don't have a dog. I don't have a dog. I have a cat. And I rescued that cat. That cat was outside. She's very feral. I am the only person that she'll let come near her. I hug her. I hold her. And she has long, fluffy hair. I am allergic to her. You hear my voice. I'm over by the kitty litter. I'm not going to do that again. But anyway, the point is, the kids out on the street, you see, what homes did they come from? They were throwing rocks at her. How can I stand to watch an animal or anything be abused?
Yeah.
So I was able to catch her. Yeah. Actually, Marty caught her, and then he gave her to me, and she became my cat. Okay, that's the way it was. And I love this cat. No, she's not going to protect me if someone comes in, but she's my little companion. Yes, she is. I love this animal. I love her. She's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think it's good for people to have pets of some kind. You know, some kind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do.
Yeah.
I swear by it as a technique. They do talk about animal therapy as one of the kinds of therapy you can do. And I've seen animal therapy in different formats. We've seen equine therapy, where the use of dog of horses.
I was just with someone
who.
Yep. I just went to a ranch where they do equine therapy. It's really nice.
I tell you, if you don't know horses, I do know horses. Horses and dogs are pretty similar on the level of their intelligence. Of course, a horse can't come and sleep in bed with you.
Right.
But it recognizes you. It trusts you. It protects you. If you're the horse's owner, he knows or she knows that you are who you are. They recognize the sound of your car pulling into the stables. I mean, all these things that dogs do. And they're very bright. So these two animals, but especially dogs, because they can actually live in our homes with us, are completely unique in the animal kingdom with their relationship with humans. There is no other two species that have that relationship like we and canines do. So, boy. And that, of course, has nothing to do with myself, Lori, or Carol. That's been, or Roberta, for that matter. That's gone back for eons, you know. Tens of thousands of years this relationship has been building. So don't miss that chance to know some animals.
Oh, I always encourage people to get an animal.
But we should have them back one. Have you been in touch with them at all? The ones from Pennsylvania? No.
Right.
That might be someone to look up also.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Because it's amazing.
Carol's referring to the fact that, you know, on these shows on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have a mixture of people who are returning, who have been with us before, and people that were new. And we mix them all up. But this would be an example of a group that we really enjoyed hearing from. And I think they were on twice in the distant past, but haven't
they
been
were,
on recently.
Yeah.
They make a great show. So you're right, Carol. That's the kind of show we need.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wait, what was the show? What makes a great show? I'm not sure I understood.
Well, this was a group of people who run one of these equine ranches for kids.
Yes.
It's an equine ranch for kids. And it's just wonderful what they do. And, you know, so they make terrific guests, is all I'm saying. And we should have them back. Carol's saying, and she's right.
Yeah.
Carol's been helping me identify, along with a couple other people, but we're now doing a little better with booking the shows, and it's a really heavy burden for me, frankly, to have to book shows constantly, because you know, the need never goes away. We do them so often. So Carol has been helpful in looking back into the past and suggesting people we can bring back.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was on a with a guy in Poway. I live in San Diego. He's in Poway. He has a couple of horses, and he does equine therapy. And I had a wonderful experience with the horses. It was really very touching. I love being around animals. I love horses. I think they're wonderful. Mm-hmm.
They're beautiful. They really sense your energy.
Oh yeah, they do. They do. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Just like a dog, they're very similar in that sense. They are your partners in life, except they can't come home and sleep in bed with you. An animal that big would, you know, do a lot of damage.
Not unless you watch The Godfather. That was awful. I'm sorry. That just went through my head.
Oh, my God. Well, I'll change the theme slightly. My first job ever was as a six-year-old. The people that lived behind us in the house we lived in New Jersey, he was the sheriff of the town, but the family business was a stable. And he had a daughter who was my age, and we were friends. My first job that I ever got paid for was on Saturdays and Sundays. He would sometimes take me with his daughter over to the stables, and I would lead smaller children than myself around in the pony ring, you know, little kids on the back of a pony. And when I did that, my pay was riding lessons. And the riding lessons were given by his daughter, same age as me. So when I was finished with the pony thing around in the corral, they assigned me a horse. His name was Domino. He was a little pinto pony, black and white. And she and I would go off riding up in the woods and whatever, in the pastures and stuff. And that's how I learned how to ride. And that was my first payment for the first job I ever did. How's that for a story? It's pretty cool, I think.
I love it. I love it.
I like that, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. I went
to a dude ranch. You don't need to be paid. Go ahead.
I went to a dude ranch for my sweet 16. Instead of having a sweet 16 party, I took my best friend to a dude ranch.
Mm.
I used to love to be around horses when I was younger.
Well, at those dude ranches, a lot of times they have like little small rodeos and all kinds of stuff, you know, and that's always fun, you know, to watch. Like they had a Wild West City build. Do you remember Wild West City? I don't know if you do or not. In Lake Apakong, they had that, yeah. And that was always fun to go to, because when I moved out to New Jersey, that's what we did. We went to Lake Apakong, and we used to see that. Horses are really a lot of fun. They absolutely are. Oh, Roberta, are you okay?
Oh, yes, I'm listening.
Oh, okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure. I don't know. It's whatever it takes to make us feel better. And we deserve to feel loved. We deserve to feel good about ourselves. We deserve everything that the normies, as we used to call them, or as we do call them, you know, we look at people. I'm a people watcher. I watch their behavior. I watch, you know, this is how I learned, you know, how to behave and how not to behave. But the point is we learn a lot from watching people. And, you know, I used to be so jealous of families. You know, that they'd be holding their kids' hands and tapping them on the head. And because we so often don't come from families like that, okay? We come from volatile backgrounds. And I remember feeling a sadness. Like when my mother died, Lori, I didn't feel grief that I'd lost my mother. I felt grief
right.
for what I didn't have with my mother.
Yes.
And she never apologized to me. She apologized. She took my daughter aside, and she said, I know that I was very bad to Carol. She says, I know this. But she didn't. She never told me. And so you see, when we grow up in families like that, it leaves a scar, a very bad scar. I don't care how far along you are on the healing journey, because people have asked me, well, I'm on the healing journey. I've been on for 4 years, 5 years. It doesn't matter. We all take, you know, whatever time it takes, and we all get to different levels. And but I still feel about this, and I feel that way about that situations in our lives that we knew that we're not right. We were left out, or whatever the case might be. And that is a painful thing. And the healing journey, I called it that years ago, and I think somehow it stuck. I don't know. But anyway, the point is, that's what it is. It is a healing journey. And I just want people to know that you can go 4 feet forward, and then all of a sudden you go 2 feet backwards because something, you know, happens. And not to get discouraged, because you just continue on, because that's all normal as you're going through the healing journey. You absolutely are. Okay, listen, we're almost out of time here. And so for the last 3 or 4 minutes, I usually give, and Bill does the same thing, we give as hosts the guests, the floor, and let them maybe leave a hope or maybe have some advice they want to give people. So, Lori, I'm going to ask if there's something you'd like to say to the people who are listening on their computers or on the phone. Is there something you'd like to leave with them?
Yeah. I would really hope that if you're listening, that you will reach out, and if you haven't already, to an organization such as NASCA or another organization that you find. If you don't want to go to even get help from a professional, these organizations are great, and it gives you an opportunity to share your story and to really people will understand what you've been through, because we really have all been there. And like Bill said, all our stories are different, but really how we live in them as adults are very similar. And I just want to say that telling my story and sharing it openly with people has given me so much freedom in life to be able to be who I am and to be truthful with who I am. And seeking our truth, there's nothing better than that. So I just would hope that people would really, if they're listening and they haven't already told their story or shared with somebody that they have been abused, that you do it, because it's not your shame. It's the shame of the abuser. And I know that it can be a scary thing, and I know that you can, you know, feel afraid that you're going to be judged, because if we've been abused, we think we're damaged. And we think that as damaged people, we're going to be looked at in a certain way. And really, we're not damaged. It's the abuser that was damaged, not us. So I do hope that people reach out and take this opportunity to think about healing and taking another step forward in whatever it is they're doing in their own personal recovery. So that's about all I have.
Well,
thank
funny.
You for joining, whoever might be listening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always say, if we reach 2, 3, 10 people, we've done our job. We absolutely have. And so I'm going to have to wrap the show up now, because we're out of time. And I want to thank everyone who has been listening. I want to thank the people that came on the guest. I want to thank Roberta and certainly Lori, our guest, and Bill. We'll be here again tomorrow. Tomorrow we will have a guest on who is a survivor who will be telling their story. That's Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So anyway, good luck. God bless you. I suggest you wear a mask. And if you see someone coming at you, run. I don't know. Get back in the house. And I don't know what to say with that. But anyway, take care, and God bless everyone.
God bless you, Carol.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you.
You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Radio. Okay.